Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. Last month, we talked about studies of very early childhood interventions, from birth to three. They show dramatic positive results on both achievement scores and character traits, such as perseverance and self-confidence. This month, our guest is Alan Sanchez, the CEO of St. Joseph Community Health. St. Joe self-funds what will be the largest prenatal to three home visiting program in the U.S. It is based in Albuquerque, but there are sister programs in Santa Fe and other New Mexico cities. Alan Sanchez, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Alan, I want to spend the first part of the program learning about the St. Joe program and then talk with you on the second part of the program about St. Joe's advocacy. But before we start all that, just a question to you. How, when, and why did you become such an advocate for these early childhood programs?
Well, you know, I have a fiduciary trust that I have to fulfill to St. Joseph Community Health. And our board went through a long process to discern what can we do to accomplish two things. One, have the most systemic change in our community for health. And where would our investment have the greatest return in social programming? And that took us to early childhood. All the studies, all the time we spent on that 2 years, took us there. And by that study and intentional discernment, that took us to early child development.
So you spent 2 years looking at this question and then decided that you wanted to put your time in. And we should say that St. Joe sold its hospital, right?
Yeah. You know, this is how I tell people. We had four hospitals here in the Albuquerque area. We sold the hospitals to a for-profit organization. We took that money.
$80 million, right?
$85 million is what our trust has. It's come from different areas, but most of it from that sale. So this $85 million, now we use that money to keep children out of that hospital. So our goal is prevention. And our goal at St. Joseph Community Health is very clear. When you walk in the door, you'll see it written there, that children reach kindergarten with the health and family capacity necessary to support learning.
Right,
that's
so,
our goal.
So let's talk about the St. Joe program.
Well, St. Joe has three programs, yeah, and it's all around early childhood. Our largest program is home visiting, using the firstborn model. And there's a number of organizations in the state using firstborn, and we've actually given some financial support to some of those. But what home visiting is home-based health education, where we send a nurse or a trained home visitor, a social worker, into the home once a week for 3 years, starting in the prenatal and until the child reaches 3 years old.
Once a week, every week of the year.
Once a week, every week of the year, with a fidelity to a goal of no less than 40 visits a year.
So, I mean, that is an incredibly intensive program, and one might ask, why? Why does it take that many visits for 3 years to tell people whatever you need to tell people?
Well, we're not telling anybody anything, see? We're educating and then partnering to journey with them in the decisions they make about their children. So we're bringing to them the best options, and we have a curriculum. This is very important. There is a curriculum that's presented every time they meet for each week of that baby's life, if it's in the week of development in the pregnancy or after birth. So you have a real clear what's happening with the baby this week of their life, a curriculum, and what things should the parents be doing to enhance the growth and health of the baby. And that health also means preparation to learn and also identifying any learning disabilities or any developmental delays early. It's all prevention, upstream. So we journey with them, give them the tools, and then they become resilient. And we also teach them to advocate for themselves and their child. See, if the parent gets that they're the primary caregiver and primary educator of their child, it doesn't matter what school that kid goes to, they're going to succeed.
So one interesting thing about your program is that there's a big medical aspect, and it starts prenatally.
Prenatally. See, one of our goals, so I told you about the goal. We have, I should say, measurable outcomes. We use an evidence-based practice curriculum, and we're looking for evidence-based outcomes. So, for instance, one of our goals is that babies are born at the right gestation age and weight. So, therefore, diet in the prenatal is very important with the moms. So we want to get these babies to full term. And this is one of the problems we have in New Mexico. 50% of our babies in the state do not meet healthy birth standards. So they're already starting behind. That's huge.
That's got to be one of the worst
We're one of the worst in the nation. Yeah. And, you know, I know that the teenage pregnancy rate is going down nationally, but we're 50% higher than the national average. So we are in a crisis with babies being born. Now, we're already able to show that the populations that are in our program, and we have the capacity to do 600 home visits a week. We're able to take those numbers and show them, and we're working, like, for instance, with Loveless, with their members of Medicaid. And if a person is in our program, the chances are much less that that baby will be in the neonatal intensive care. These are the million-dollar babies. Right there, we have decreased millions of dollars of expense on babies and keeping them healthy. The other thing that we can already show is that members of health plans that are in our program, even those who are registered through Medicaid, for instance, in the Loveless plan or Molina, were able to show that their frequency or use of the emergency room decreases or is eliminated completely. Because the emergency room is the most expensive health care that you could offer. Instead, we're educating them to understand when is an emergency or not, and when do you need to go to the pediatrician, the prevention. We create a medical home. There's a relationship between the parent and the pediatrician. Pediatricians tell us all the time, we can tell what babies are coming from St. Joe's because that parent comes in with a list of questions. They are ready to engage us.
Now, one of the really interesting things about home visiting programs, and there's actually a long history of home visiting programs, starting with the Nurse Family Partnership, the Parish Preschool Program.
Many of them.
Many. And they get these incredible economic results vis-a-vis the state because these programs have been studied in double-blind studies, and what they show is that the economic returns are to the state now, not to the parent, not to the child,
excellent.
But to the state, are sometimes 4, 5, or even greater to one. And it sounds like what you're experiencing already shows that because these million-dollar babies are million-dollar. They cost the state $1 million if the mother and child are on Medicaid.
Yeah. Now, you have to understand that Medicaid is really purchasing health care for people. So the first beneficiary, as far as financially, is the insurance companies. They're the ones out there being able to collect premiums from the federal government but not paying out for babies in care. So the first one that benefits is the private industry insurances. The second then is the government. And also with other social programs.
They'll pay lower premiums.
Lower premiums. And then the government benefits also from the social programs that then need for intensive support after birth. This is where we're seeing a great savings to the state. And then, of course, to the parents in the health and the time that it'll take to care for a sick baby rather than a healthy baby. So economically, that really proves itself. And then the second large thing we see in the health of a baby is a baby's brain developing. And you've seen those studies,
yeah,
Steve.
Brain science,
it is unbelievable.
First 3 years, yeah.
What we've seen with the science there. So then these children take advantage of the expensive investment we make in K-12. And we've heard the big debate in the state all about we're putting a lot of money into K-12. And I can't tell you, what's the right amount, but I'll tell you one thing. We have not been taking advantage of that investment because the child arrives behind and cannot take full advantage of what's being offered. So the state's losing money there.
Now, and last month, Alan, on our show, we had Paul Tuff, and he talked a lot about early attachment and the benefits of early attachment. And that's really one of the aspects of your program.
Yes,
is to
we
form
help
this
the families,
relationship.
We help the families have this growth where the child then grows up healthier, more confident, more attached to the mother
and
father.
So how do you do that?
Well, this is part of it. There are exercises that you should do with your child. A lot of people don't know that. There's actually myths that we have to go out there and break. For instance, If you pick up your baby too much, you're going to spoil them. There is no such thing. There is no evidence to say that. A matter of fact,
that was Dr. Spock.
Oh my gosh! In a matter of fact, the more the child is in contact with the mother in those first 4 to 6 months, that is creating a more confident person, knowing that you will always be there for them. It actually creates the opposite. So those are simple things. Also, exercises that they should do on the floor with the baby. I went on a home visit, and this was really neat. There was a baby, and they thought the baby had a developmental delay in crawling. And the nurse got on the floor with the mom and the baby, and it turns out that they were using the wrong surface for this baby to be crawling on. They threw down a blanket on a tile floor, threw down the blanket, and then the home visitors told them, look, just put the palms of your hands on the palms of the feet of the baby and the instinct of the baby with the palm will take off crawling. And this little guy just shot off, you know. it's so, you know, from little things to big things, it all adds up. And then also the confidence we give them, because our program has a second component, which is different than a lot of home visiting. We have enhanced referral. We connect these parents to the resources that are already available from state or nonprofits. So it's a private-public partnership. Get them connected to how, if you need food, how do you use the food pantries or the SNAP, which is already paid for and offered by our government, or Medicaid, doing the paperwork. How do you keep the baby registered? Because that's where we lose babies dropping through the cracks. So this is all important to help a parent know how to navigate the system. And there's another benefit. By our program, and we're a Catholic program. There's many that aren't, okay? We just happen to be a Catholic, but we don't go in to evangelize. It's just like a hospital. You know, you go to a Catholic hospital, they don't use a different medicine on you. But what we're showing is that just the education of how much your baby needs you delays the birth of the second child, which helps in this bonding and the time that the parent needs to give to that child. So that's incredible what happens there. You know, we talk about teen pregnancy, but it's not a teen having one baby. In many cases, it's a teen having two or three before they're 20 years old. That goes away with home visiting, only by educating and understanding what your baby needs.
So let me just mention, if you've just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have the CEO of St. Joseph Community Health on the program today. His name is Alan Sanchez. And Alan, just a couple more things about your program. One is that it's very expensive. I mean, you're trying to get it down to $3,000 a year, right?
Yeah, well, our goal, and part of that is capacity. As you create routes, when you send out a home visitor, the least amount of mileage that they have to travel between home and home is where you find your savings. And so as more and more families register, our costs go down. Also because you have, you know, far more people being served by a smaller administration, because you don't want to have a bunch of money in administration. You want it on programming. So the larger we get, of course, the cheaper it becomes. And our model, we don't use only nurses. We use also trained
educators.
Yeah, the nurse
family partnership is much more expensive. They use all nurses.
And that's important for really high-risk babies. Now, we're universal access. We accept anybody in there, but we do target poorer communities, just knowing that the risks that are greater there. So our program is less expensive. And I always say it's important to have a nurse or nurses on the staff. But if they're having an emergency, and I tell our staff this all the time, if a family's having an emergency and they call us, we are failing in educating them. Who they should be calling, if it's an emergency, either 911 or the hospital, or if it's urgent, they should be calling the pediatrician, not us. See? We don't want them to become dependent on our service. We want to enable
them
to be resilient and proactive, and that they're picking up the phone calling their
pediatrician. And you focus a lot on the mother herself, right? Yes. That's something we haven't mentioned.
Yeah, well, I'll go back to a little sign I've used before. You've probably heard me say this. You know, the first time I heard about infant mental health, I thought it was a ridiculous statement. And this little image popped in my head of a baby laying on the couch of a psychiatrist. You know, how are they going to help this baby? But it hit me. If the baby could talk, what would the baby be saying? Saying, "Doc, it's my parents. They just don't get me." And that's what home visiting is about, is helping the parent get it and get it early. And that changes everything for the future of the child. Like some people say, you know, Catholic schools, you know, you have all this success, 99 point something graduation. It has nothing to do with the school. The school's not any better. The teachers aren't any better. It's that we attract engaged parents. Why could we not help all parents be that engaged? And it doesn't matter what school they go to, they will succeed. They will succeed because the component missing in our education system right now is parents.
So I want to move, Alan, if we can, to the second part of the show in the legislative advocacy, because even if your program ramps up to 600 babies
a week,
I mean, that would be an incredibly large program. A lot of these
in the metropolitan area. Yeah, in the metropolitan area.
A lot of these programs are 40 and 50 kids. Yours is already a huge program at 200 plus.
Yeah, almost 300 now.
Yeah, almost 300. So, but the problem is there's 26,000 something like that births in New Mexico a year.
Yeah. Now we serve only firstborn.
Yeah, I understand.
And I think if we do that all over the state, eventually we reach all families, because the investment you make, this is where it sounds expensive, that you're spending $3,000 on the firstborn, but that $3,000 could be spread over two or three children. Because the mom and dad, once they've had that training with the first one, then they don't need the second or third child training.
But still, what you propose in legislatively, yeah. By you I mean St. Joseph, yeah. Is that there would be a distribution of 1.5% additional.
Yes. From now the permanent fund. Let me talk about that because I have to do a disclaimer.
Yes.
St. Joseph Community Health takes no government money, federal or state. We want to be able to be free to talk and advocate for the children. Nobody can pull the rug out from under us because we're taking government money. And we're not advocating to fund. We don't have a self-interest. Our interest is that all children in New Mexico reach kindergarten with the health and family capacity to
support. It's a hard objective to criticize.
Yeah, that's hard. So that's what we're doing, and we're there. So we want – let me give you an image here. We should not be proud. There's nothing to be proud of having a lockbox of permanent funds of billions of dollars when our children remain in permanent poverty and underachievement in school. Those two permanencies have to change. And so we see the state, we rank 49th. I have right in front of me the Anne E. Casey Foundation Kids Count. You can Google that. Anybody listening, Google Kids Count, and you're going to see New Mexico repeatedly ranks 49th in children's well-being, education, yeah. Health, family. All it's just terrible.
Almost every category.
Almost every category. We're at the bottom of the list. And get this. New Mexico does rank second in something. We have the second largest land-grant permanent fund in the nation dedicated to education. What is wrong with this picture? If you had a scale, you would see it completely lopsided. That we're proud that we have a lockbox of $16 billion with $11 billion of it dedicated to education. Now, we do draw some off for K-12, okay? And we do need funding in K-12. It's come out. Well, this permanent fund serves our children, but it's missing something. Not a penny is drawn off for 0 to 5. Less than 1% of our state's budget goes to this population of children in prenatal to 5.
I mean, there's another irony, because that 0 to 5 is the period of time in a child's life when you can have the most effect.
Most effect, where the greatest return of your investment takes place, where you can do a paradigm shift and change the direction the child or the family are going into. So this permanent fund, so for our listeners to understand, it's called a land-grant fund. It was set up in 1910, so it's archaic. It's old. But it's got an archaic formula, too, because it only wants to fund children after they're 6 years old. Well, that model, it's gone. It's inevitable. It's inevitable that the fund and its distribution formula catches up with the science and the research that children begin learning at birth. That has to really change. So we're asking the legislators to do something for us. They have to discern, is pulling 1.5% off of the permanent fund a year, is that worthy of a public debate by placing it on the ballot? Now, we did a poll by Brian Sandroff, a full sample, an expensive poll. And it came back that 80% of our people in our state want it on the ballot. And 71% said they would vote for it the day of that poll. So the permanent fund has this money in there. 5.5 is drawn off each year for K-12. And for other beneficiaries, there's 22 beneficiaries, like a school for the blind, school for the deaf. And it's very important to understand, we're not creating a new beneficiary. We're expanding the definition of education to include the little guys. So all boats float in this water. We want them to raise the distribution, and school for the blind, school for the deaf, they will get their portion. We won't be taking any of theirs. We will be taking some from K-12. K-12 has a cliff coming. They have a draw off of this fund right now of 5.5. That is going to drop to 5%. We're looking at about a $45 million cliff coming to K-12.
Okay, so let me just mention, if you just tuned in, this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and our guest today is Alan Sanchez, and we're talking about the legislative proposal by a number of child advocacy organizations to increase the distributions of the permanent fund 1.5%. And Alan, if the committee reports are accurate, and I have no idea if they are, most of the objections are financial to your proposal.
Well,
they say you're going to endanger the permanent fund, and I know that, for example, your own fund draws off about 5%. So the legislators say, well, you know, we're already drawing off 5%, and you're going to add another 1.5%. There's $10 billion in the fund. You're going to knock it down to some number that doesn't work for all the beneficiaries.
Well, I'm really glad you went down that road because they do compare the fund to an endowment. Let's get it straight. It is not an endowment. It's not an endowment. You could change course on it any time by the people because it's governed by the Constitution. So only the people of the state by a vote can change things. So it's not an endowment. My fund of $85 million, St. Joe's fund, huh? The one I'm responsible for, draws 5% because it's a stagnant fund, meaning it only has revenue from investment. So any new money we get, we have to go out and raise money. Any new money, and most nonprofits who have endowments do this. They spend 5% because they got about a 6 or 7, maybe sometimes 8% return from investment. Okay, let's do the math. We spend 5% of the principal from the investment, and we spend 100% of new money. The state spends zero from new money. There's two sources. It's not a stagnant fund. It grows by two sources of revenue. One, investment, like an endowment, but it's not an endowment because it also grows by gas and oil royalties. You have to remember, our state is tiny.
Those have been growing, I think, by 5 or 6% a year.
No, it's huge.
But then they argue. Okay, they mm-hmm. say, okay, look, they've been growing 5 or 6% per year. We grant you that, Alan.
Okay.
But who knows about the future?
Worse than 2008. It can't get worse than 2008, and that fund has recovered nicely. It went down as low as $8 billion, and now it's back up to the $16 billion. Just like everybody else's stuff, it's recovering and it's strong. But this is the argument I make. A senator told me, Alan, you want to destroy the permanent fund and its power. And I told him, you know what? Do nothing and it will destroy itself. Because the cycle, you got two things growing. The need, here goes the big alarm, 40% don't graduate from our schools. The need is outpacing the growth of the fund. If we do nothing now, in 15 years, the fund will have no power to change course. But today we can change course by taking a little more out, and the math is there. The fund will grow, but in all honesty, it will grow slower.
Well, of course it will. Now, let me just ask another financial thing, because another objection is you want to spend $150 million, basically, or more per year. Now, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Now, but what's interesting to me is that Governor Martinez wants to, by the no social promotion, hold back third graders who can't read. About 50% of them can't read. That costs about $12,000 a year if you did it. That would be almost the same exact amount of money, $150 million a year.
And no promise you're going to have success there.
Well, okay? I saw an article in the Journal where Hannah Scandera said it didn't work. Only 12% of the kids held back last year read a proficiency the next year.
Flunking kids. Now, I don't have a dog in that fight. Why? Because if we go up to do early child development, go upstream, we will eliminate the whole debate over flunking kids. Flunking kids is the most expensive option that we have. Why would you go for the most expensive option than to take the cheapest or less expensive option? Remember, the more you spend on the playpen, the more you're going to save at the state pen. And this is where we're convincing the state. If you do this paradigm shift for 10 years, take 1.5%. And I started to say this earlier. Remember, we're a small state population-wise. We're only 2 million people. A $16 billion fund should be able to have a huge impact on that little society. See? So we're tiny population-wise. We're huge landmass and huge gas and oil. We are the third largest gas and oil producer in the nation, and most of that is coming off of government land. So we do the paradigm shift, invest for 10 years, and then those babies will be in third grade, and we will prove their reading.
Let me push back on another aspect of this, Alan, because I did a lot of looking at studies in preparation for the show, and one of the things I saw was that as these pre-K and early childhood programs are scaled up, when they go from 40 or 50, yours is already a huge, but from 200 or so, mm-hmm. if they go to thousands, they tend to lose their effectiveness. They you know, they go from improving at-risk kids' scores by 50 to 80% to about 5%, almost nothing. Right. And the idea is just enrolling more kids and more
programs. No, that's not going to work. Let me 2 points. One, $150 million a year is a lot of money. We have a study. You can go to the website of investinkidsnow.org, and you'll see the study on there. The need is actually $380 million. Okay, so we're not even near what the need is. So that's one part. The money is not even enough at the 150. And we phase it in. You don't just drop the whole 150 into the state. You phase it in. But part of it is that you have a second fight that has to happen. Right now, we're just appropriating the money. There has to – and that's a constitutional amendment goes on the ballot. The second part is you have to have accompanying legislation about the distribution and the what you need from this. For instance, we're introducing a bill called the Home Visiting Opportunity Act. It's really an accountability act that if you're a provider and you want state funding, you're going to have to meet some very strict requirements. Now, we're kind of careful. You want to whisper that because people that don't want to work, they don't want this. Like with childcare, it can't just be babysitting. These are going to have to be high-quality learning centers
and
small.
That's almost what the difference is.
You hit the nail on the head.
You go from pre-K education to essentially babysitting or childcare.
We cannot have that. It has to be a learning center, which also provides parent support, parenting classes, and referral for needs. If it doesn't include that, it should not take place. And so we have other accompanying legislation that has to follow this.
But these, in other places where this has happened, Alan, the effectiveness has not been there.
Right, because they haven't done the accountability piece. And this is the piece that why I'm telling – I meet with ECAN, Decade of the Child, all these organizations who meet and work around children saying, you got 4 years to get the silos broken down and get the systems working. And what are the evidence-based programs we're going to use? And this is where I keep challenging the legislators. What evidence-based programs we're going to use, we need to put in place now. We got 4 years to do that because if we pass this in January, let's say we pass it in this coming legislature, then it goes to the voters in 2014. And then it wouldn't be till 2016 that money begins to be distributed. So at any point, the legislators have in their power and the governor to not disperse any money. But if you got the money there, then everybody comes to the table and does the work that has to happen so that we have the high-quality programs. And then we put in a check here that has a sunset. In 10 years, we got to do this all over again because in 10 years, no money can be withdrawn because you have to have done an evaluation. The sunset is an important piece of this so that we put it in place and we measure it.
You have to have
and
proved
if we're not
met,
you
works.
Have to have proven it or you don't get another penny. You don't get another penny. So then at that point, we come back with the proof. We show the programs that work. And the ones that don't, I'm sorry, but you're written out of the possibility of getting any money.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time. I would like to thank my guest, Alan Sanchez. Alan is the CEO of St. Joseph's Community Health. I would also like to thank my producer, Joe Green. You've been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz. Podcasts of my recent shows are searchable on iTunes under Stephen Spitz. Archives of all my past shows are available at the Spitz Report, stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.